Chapter 30. Pitt got away fast. The race official at the gate saw him coming and hustled people out of the way. The Stutz hit the parking lot at 80 kilometers an hour, 20 seconds behind the white Lincoln. They tore between the aisles of parked cars, Pitt holding the horn button down in the center of the steering wheel. Thankfully, the lot was empty of people. All the spectators and concourse entrants were in the stands watching the races, many of whom now turned and stared at the turquoise Stutz as it swept toward the street, twin chrome horns blasting the air. Pitt was inflamed with madness. The chances of stopping the limousine and rescuing Lauren were next to impossible. It was a chase bred of desperation. There was little hope a 60-year-old machine could run down a modern limousine pulled by a big V8 engine giving out almost twice the horsepower. This was more than a criminal kidnapping, he knew. He feared the abductors meant for Lauren to die. Pitt cramped the wheel as they hit the highway outside the racetrack, careening sideways in a protesting screech of rubber, fishtailing down the highway in chase of the Lincoln. "They've got a heavy lead," Mancuso said sharply. "We can cut it," Pitt said in determination. He snapped the wheel to one side and then back again to dodge a car entering the two-lane highway from a side road. "Until they're certain they're being chased, they won't drive over the speed limit and risk being stopped by a cop. The best we can do is keep them in sight until the state police can intercept." Pitt's theory was on the money. The charging Stutz began to gain on the limousine. Mancuso nodded through the windshield. "They're turning onto Highway 5 along the James River." Pitt drove with a loose and confident fury. The Stutz was in its element on a straight road with gradual turns. He loved the old car, its complex machinery, the magnificent styling and fabulous engine. Pitt pushed the old car hard, driving like a demon. The pace was too much for the Stutz, but Pitt talked to it, ignoring the strange look on Mancuso's face, urging and begging it to run beyond its limits. And the Stutz answered. To Mancuso it was incredible. It seemed to him that Pitt was physically lifting the car to higher speeds. He stared at the speedometer and saw the needle touching 98 miles per hour. The dynamic old machine had never been driven that fast when it was new. Mancuso held onto the door as Pitt shot around cars and trucks, passing several at one time, so fast Mancuso was amazed they didn't spin off the road on a tight bend. Mancuso heard another sound above the exhaust of the Stutz and looked up from the open chauffeur's compartment into the sky. "We have a helicopter riding herd," he announced.
"Police?"
"No markings. It looks commercial."
"Too bad we don't have a radio."
They had drawn up within 200 meters of the limousine when the Stutz was discovered, and the Lincoln carrying Lauren immediately began to pick up speed and slip away. Then, to add to the growing setback, a good old farm boy, driving a big Dodge pickup truck with two rifles slung across the rear window, spotted the antique auto climbing up his truck bed and decided to do a little funnin' to keep the Stutz from passing. Every time Pitt pulled over the center line to overtake the Dodge, the wiry, oily-haired driver, who grinned with half a mouth of vacant teeth, just cackled and veered to the opposite side of the road, cutting the Stutz off. Mancuso pulled his little automatic from its ankle holster. "I'll put one through the clown's windshield." "Give me a chance to bulldog him," said Pitt. Bulldogging was an old-time race driver's trick. Pitt eased up on the right side of the Dodge, then backed off and came at the other. He repeated the process, not trying to force his way past, but taking control of the situation. The skinny truck driver swerved side to side to block what he thought were Pitt's attempts to pass. Holding the Stutz at bay after numerous assaults, his head began to swivel to see where the old classic car was coming from next. And then he made the mistake Pitt was hoping for. He lost his concentration on a curve and slipped onto the gravel shoulder. His next mistake was to oversteer. The Dodge whipped wildly back and forth and then hurtled off the road, rolling over in a clump of low trees and bushes before coming to rest on its top and crushing a hornet's nest. The farm boy was only bruised in the crash, but the hornets almost killed him before he escaped the upside-down truck and leaped into a nearby pond. "Slick work," said Mancuso, staring back. Pitt allowed a quick grin. "It's called methodical recklessness." The grin vanished as he swerved around a truck and saw a flatbed trailer stopped on the blind side of a curve. The truck had lost part of its cargo, three oil barrels that had fallen off the trailer. One had burst and spread a wide, greasy slick on the pavement. The white limousine had missed striking the truck, but lost traction in the oil and made two complete 360-degree circles before its driver incredibly straightened it out and darted ahead. The Stutz went into a sideways four-wheel drift, tires smoking, the sun flashing on its polished wheel covers. Mancuso braced himself for the impact against the rear of the truck he was sure would come. Pitt fought the skid for a horrifying 100 meters before the black tire marks were finally behind him. Then he was into the oil. He didn't touch his brakes or fight the car, but shoved in the clutch and let the car roll free and straight over the slippery pool. Then he eased the car along the grass shoulder beside the road until the tires were rid of the oil, then resumed the chase only a few seconds now behind the Lincoln. After the near miss, Mancuso was amazed to see Pitt blithely carry on as if he was on a Sunday drive. "The helicopter?" Pitt asked, conversationally. Mancuso bent his head back. "Still with us, flying above and to the right of the limo. I have a gut feeling they're working together." "Does seem strange there are no markings on the bird," agreed Mancuso. "If they're armed, we could be in for a bad time." Mancuso nodded. "That's a fact. My pea-shooter won't do much against automatic assault weapons from the air. Still, they could have opened up and shot off our water miles back." "Speaking of water," said Mancuso, pointing at the radiator. The strain on the old car was beginning to tell. Steam was hissing from the filler cap under the Sun Goddess, and oil was streaking from the louvers of the hood. And as Pitt braked before a tight turn, he might just as well have raised a sail. The brake lining was overheated and badly faded. The only event that occurred when Pitt pushed the pedal was the flash of the taillights. Pitt had visions of Lauren tied and gagged in the plush rear seat of the limousine. Fear and anxiety swept through him like a gust of icy wind. Whoever abducted her might have already murdered her. He pushed the terrible thought from his mind and told himself the kidnappers could not afford to lose her as a hostage. But if they harmed her, they would die, he vowed ruthlessly. Driving as if possessed, he was consumed with determination to rescue Lauren. Using every scrap of his stubborn spirit, he pursued the Lincoln relentlessly. "We're holding on to them," Mancuso observed. "They're toying with us," Pitt replied, eyeing the road between the Sun Goddess hood ornament and the rear bumper of the white limousine racing only 50 meters ahead. "They should have enough power to leave us in their fumes." "Could be an engine problem." "I don't think so. The driver is a professional. He's maintained an exact distance between us since the oil spill." Mancuso looked at his watch as the sun's rays flashed through the trees branching over the road. "Where in hell are the state police?" "Chasing all over the countryside. Giordino has no way of knowing which direction we took." "You can't keep up this pace much longer." "Al will smell out our trail," Pitt said with complete confidence in his longtime friend. Mancuso tilted his head as his ears picked up a new sound. He rose up on his knees and looked back and upward through the overhanging trees. He began waving madly. "What is it?" Pitt asked, decelerating around a sharp turn and over a short bridge that spanned a narrow stream, his foot pushing the near-useless brake pedal to the floor. "I think the cavalry has arrived," Mancuso shouted excitedly. "Another helicopter," Pitt acknowledged. "Can you see markings?" The speeding cars raced out of the trees and into open farmland. The approaching helicopter banked to one side, and Mancuso could read the wording on the cowling under the engine and rotor blades. "Henrico County Sheriff's Department," he yelled above the heavy thump of the rotor blades. Then he recognized Giordino waving from an open doorway. The little Italian had arrived, and not a minute too soon. The Stutz was on its last breath. The pilot in the strange copter flying above the limousine saw the new arrival, too. He suddenly veered off, dropped low, and headed northeast at full throttle, quickly disappearing behind a row of trees bordering a cornfield. The Lincoln appeared to slowly drift to one side of the road. Pitt and Mancuso watched in helpless horror as the long white limo angled onto the shoulder, soared over a small ditch, and surged into the cornfield as if chasing the fleeing helicopter. Pitt took in the rapid change of scene in one swift, sweeping glance. Reacting instantly, he twisted the wheel, sending the Stutz after the Lincoln. Mancuso's mouth hung in shock as the dry and brittle cornstalks, left standing after husking, whipped the windshield. Instinctively, he ducked down in the seat with his arms over his head. The Stutz plunged after the limousine, bouncing wildly on its ancient springs and shock absorbers. The dust clouds flew so thick Pitt could hardly see past the Sun Goddess, yet his foot remained jammed flat on the accelerator. They burst through a wire fence. A piece of it clipped Mancuso on the side of the head, and then they were out of the cornfield almost on top of the limousine. It had shot into the open at an incredible rate of speed in a direct line toward a concrete silo with the Stutz right behind. "Oh, God," Mancuso murmured, seeing disaster. Despite the shock of witnessing an approaching crash that he was helpless to prevent, Pitt jerked the steering wheel violently to his right, throwing the Stutz in a spin around the other side of the silo and missing piling into the Lincoln by an arm's length. He heard rather than saw the convulsive crash of metal tearing apart, followed by the crackled splash of shattered glass against concrete. A great cloud of dust burst from the base of the silo and shrouded the devastated limousine. Pitt was out of the Stutz before it stopped and running toward the crash site. Fear and dread spread through his body as he came around the silo and viewed the shattered, twisted car. No one could have lived after such a terrible impact. The engine had pushed through the firewall and was shoved against the front seat. The steering wheel was thrust up against the roof. Pitt could not see any sign of the chauffeur and assumed his body must have been thrown to the other side of the car. The passenger compartment had accordioned, raising the roof in a strange peak and bending the doors inward, jamming them shut so tightly nothing less than an industrial metal saw could cut them away. Pitt desperately kicked out the few glass shards remaining in a broken door window and thrust his head inside. The crumpled interior was empty. In numbed slow motion, Pitt walked around the car, searching under it for signs of bodies. He found nothing, not even a trace of blood or torn clothing. Then he looked at the caved-in dashboard and found the reason for the vacant ghost car. He tore a small instrument from its electrical connectors and studied it, his face reddening in anger. He was still standing by the wreckage as the chopper landed and Giordino ran up, trailed by Mancuso, who was holding a bloodied handkerchief to one ear. "Lauren?" Giordino asked with grim concern. Pitt shook his head and tossed the strange instrument to Giordino. "We were hoodwinked. This car was a decoy, operated by an electronic robot unit and driven by someone in the helicopter." Mancuso stared wildly about the limo. "I saw her get in," he said dazedly. "So did I," Giordino backed him up. "Not this car," Pitt spoke quietly. "But it was never out of your sight." "But it was. Think about it. The 22nd had start when it left the track and drove under the stands to the parking lot. The switch must have been made then." Mancuso removed the handkerchief, revealing a neat slice just above his earlobe. "It fits. This one was never out of our sight once we hit the highway." Mancuso broke off suddenly and looked miserably at the demolished limo. No one moved or said anything for several moments. "We lost her," Giordino said as if in pain, his face pale. "God help us, we lost her." Pitt stared at the car unseeing, his big hands clenched in anger and despair. "We'll find Lauren," he said, his voice empty and cold as Arctic stone, "and make those pay who took her."